There's a Buddhist saying that says, when you're meditating, watch your mind. And when you're out in public, watch your speech. Watch your mouth. This year, we're doing a year-long series on the Eightfold Path. And then periodically, I'll give these talks over the course of the year, focusing on each element of the Eightfold Path. And this month, the element is right speech. So I thought I would talk a little bit about this notion of right speech as it fits into the Eightfold Path. A little bit background for the Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path is that path which has a particular purpose, has a particular direction. And that is, it has a purpose for liberation. And that's a whole topic about what liberation is. But in brief, it's that release of the heart and the mind from the forces of contraction, of clinging, of compulsion, of fear, of egotism, that somehow keeps us in states of suffering. And so the release of that is liberation. And that can be done in small ways, moment by moment. And some people find a lot of meaning in some momentary tuning in to some possibility of freedom here and now, where freedom is only, you know, a breath away, even closer. And other people get a lot of meaning from the idea that the forces of clinging, of attachment, of bondage, of compulsion inside of us, of ego, is very deeply rooted in the psyche. And they get a lot of meaning from the idea that it's a slow process of slowly working towards some degree of freedom, of release. But the Eightfold Path has to do with this purpose of liberation. And that's very important to remember, because you could have other purposes in your life, and you're welcome to have that. But when you look, but the question the Eightfold Path is asking is, how is it we can live our life if what you want is liberation? How can you live your life so your life supports that movement towards liberation? If you're not interested in liberation, then you don't have to listen to this talk. And I say that a little bit, I say it carefully, because it can sound, the Eightfold Path sometimes can sound moralistic, like this is what you should do, this is how you should live your life. Especially when we get into speech, you know, right speech. And there certainly is virtue and morality and ethics and integrity. It's very important in Buddhism. And the area of ethics in Buddhism is bigger than what's discussed in the Eightfold Path. But the Eightfold Path focuses on that part of ethics that has to do with what supports you, if what you want is to move towards liberation, is freedom. So for that purpose. So the Eightfold Path begins with right view, which means the right understanding about what really is at stake when you're looking at liberation. And in order to do that, you have to understand something about the opposite liberation. You have to, what's the opposite liberation, in a word, language that I don't like to use so much, but if you can't get away from it perhaps, is bondage. And you find in the Buddhist language, he used the word bondage often enough, that somehow when we operate, when we function, when we're motivated by force inside of us, that we feel like we have no control over. When we say things and do things and even think things and feel things that we'd rather not have happen, but we don't feel like we could stop it. And that momentum of compulsive or addictive or forceful kind of movements in us can cause us suffering, cause us pain. And you can wonder sometimes, why am I suffering so much? And sometimes it's a bit of a mystery. Sometimes it's very obvious. But even if it's obvious, sometimes it's very easy to just say, okay, I'll just let go of it and live happily ever after. So the beginning of it is to begin understanding something about what bondage is, or what is it that limits us or contracts us, or what is it that causes us suffering. And in particular, to begin orienting ourselves towards that part of our suffering that we contribute to. And that's a huge challenge. That's a huge challenge for all of us, to begin appreciating our contribution towards our suffering. It's easy to blame other people. Blame the government. We can all do that tomorrow. On Monday, Tuesday. We're allowed to do it one day a year. Or we can blame our relatives, our family, our upbringing. We can blame all kinds of things out there. And there's some truth that the world contributes to our suffering. We can't never forget that. However, that's not where the Buddhist path is found. The Eightfold Path is not found out there. It's found by figuring out, what is my contribution to the suffering? So if you stick your hand into a fire, you don't blame the fire for getting burnt. You should be interested in your contribution to that. What was I doing? What was I thinking? And so the idea is to take responsibility for our contribution. And in shorthand, what Buddhists called our contribution is thirst or addiction or something compulsive inside of us. And then the idea is to find out how to let go of that compulsion. So that's the beginning of the path, is understanding suffering, the cause of suffering, and the release of suffering. To appreciate, that's what it's about. But if you want that release or that liberation, it's also helpful if you begin kind of orienting yourself or setting a certain intention, a certain attitude for how you're going to live your life then. How are you going to integrate? It's one thing to be a weekend liberator. You can do it on Sunday morning. It's nice. But if we want to do it, the whole week, the whole life, then it takes more than just kind of showing up, for a Sunday morning. It takes, what does it take in terms of, and it takes more than just a ritual, more than just kind of following certain rules. It takes some kind of inner change. And one of those inner changes is to take interest and responsibility for our contribution, to turn in here. I read recently, maybe it's an old saying, someone said, and that person of integrity would rather suffer injustice than cause it. Isn't that an interesting idea? So if you had to choose between the two, what would you do? So a person of a kind of upright integrity would rather suffer injustice than actually be the cause of it to others. But is there some way of suffering injustice that we're upright in the process? It maintains our dignity, our nobility. Or is it possible to receive an injustice and be crushed by it, and fall back to anger and hostility? Is there some inner way of responding to our world where our inner attitude is not blown around by the winds of the conditions of the world? So the second aspect of the Eightfold Path is beginning to take some responsibility for our inner attitude that we bring into whatever endeavor we're going to do. And in particular, the idea is to shift from an attitude, an approach, or an intention, switch from those intentions that have to do with causing harm, and to those that do not cause harm. That's the primary one. And then there's two others that are often talked about, but the idea of not causing harm. Because if you want to be liberated, to cause harm, intentionally cause harm to yourself or to others, is not operating from a place of liberation. So it just goes against the grain of that movement. So again, to come back and find out, how can I maintain myself, be mindful and clear, so I can be upright in any situation and not cause harm. To have that wish, that intention, to have the background of what we're doing. Now, in the Eightfold Path, there are eight steps, and each of them is prefaced by the word right. And the Pali word, the Indian word, is sama. And right here means the right tool for a particular job. And the job, of course, here is liberation. So what's the right tool for that purpose? So in terms of our intentionality, the right tool is to have the intention of not causing any harm. Or maybe the opposite of that, to cause benefit. Then we get to right speech. Right speech is that speech which supports us moving towards liberation. Wrong speech is the wrong tool, is the kind of speech that actually keeps us in bondage or keeps us suffering, keeps us kind of in some states we don't want to be in. So is it possible to look at our acts of speech and analyze them by whether they move us towards states of health or liberation or freedom or happiness, or they move us in the opposite direction? Is it possible to make that analysis? And as part of the Eightfold Path, the Buddha is suggesting that it's actually very important to make that analysis. Not just to talk casually, you know, carelessly, whatever comes out your mouth is fine to say, but actually be concerned about what it is that you're saying, what you're doing. So again, it's taking responsibility for ourselves and not some magic thinking or not some kind of looking for spirituality, some kind of comfort. That's a beautiful kind of spiritual kind of sense of comfort out there that we're all held nicely by the Dharma. But rather, the Dharma practice is about looking in here and how is it that I can be more upright? How I can be more responsible? And so we begin with our speech. How can I speak in a more careful way? I'm a little bit concerned by saying that. It sounds heavy. You know, oh no. You know, another one of these fire and brimstone sermons from Gill. But that's not the spirit of it. The spirit is if you have this interest, you know, it's like if you want to learn baseball, then you have certain things you got to learn how to be. You know, you have certain rules you follow. So if you want to play the liberation game. So the Buddha, then when he defines right speech, he lists four kinds of wrong speech and then four kinds of right speech. And they're kind of opposites of each other. So the first one is the wrong speech is speech which is false, lying. And the right speech, the right tool, is speech which is truthful. Tell the truth. The second is malicious speech, this wrong speech, speech that has intention to cause harm. And right speech is speech which has the intention of causing benefit, bringing harmony, bringing concord. Malicious speech is often said to be speech which wants to divide, like gossiping, or sometimes has a nature of dividing people. Or the second is malicious speech, as wrong speech, and beneficial speech, you know, causing benefit. The third is harsh speech, and this is speech which is not necessarily wanting to harm someone, but it's just spoken in such a harsh way that it feels painful to hear. And then the opposite of that, I suppose, would be gentle speech or comforting speech. And then the last one is usually translated into English as idle speech. And I learned Friday that the idle speech, apparently the Pali word for it, means something like the empty husk of sesame seed or something, the word. So kind of the empty speech maybe is a better translation. Speech which is kind of vacuous, kind of the shell of speech, you know, has no. And so then the opposite of idle speech, I guess, would be, I forget what it says in the text, but which is not idle, which is beneficial, useful speech. So that's kind of a list. But what's, I think, more interesting in the list, and certainly more interesting for people who are meditators, who are on this path of liberation, is not following this like rules. You know, thinking about your speech, oh, I'll have to analyze, is it, you know. And that's, it can be useful. You can avoid causing a lot of harm. But what's interesting is not what you say, ultimately. What's interesting is what's behind your speech, what motivates it. That's what's really interesting. For people who are interested in liberation, It's what motivates us, what's deeper inside in the heart, which is interesting, not kind of the symptoms of what's expressed. So when you're going to tell a lie, when you're going to lie, what is it that motivates that? When you're saying the truth, what motivates that? When you're going to speak maliciously, what motivates that? When you're going to speak in a way that's beneficial, what motivates that? Idle speech, what motivates that? And one of the most powerful ways of practicing mindfulness is not on the cushion, not meditation, but rather is mindfulness of your speech. If you ask yourself the question, why did I say that? Why did I just say that? Why am I saying this? What's motivating me to say this? And so it's pretty embarrassing pretty quickly if you really ask that question. And if you come with a single answer while you're saying something, you probably haven't explored it as fully as you could. Oh, because that person needed that information. Okay, so an example I made up on Friday, which comes to mind now, is if I go out in El Camino here and someone asks me, how do I get to the post office in Redwood City? I could say, well, you go south on El Camino, take a left in Jefferson, go under the train tracks, past the first stoplight, and on the right is the post office. Right? So why did I say that? Well, they asked me. So I told them, leave me alone, don't bother me. But, you know, what other motivations were going on while you said that? Oh, I wanted to show them how clever I am in giving really clear directions, that they are foolproof. You know, just show, you know, I'm a clever direction giver. Or I noticed that some other IMC people were kind of around El Camino. And you know, if I could show how compassionate and caring I am, they'll think very good about me. So I'm really going to make an effort and really kind of really be present for that person and give clear directions. And so then, you know, showing off maybe is part of it. There could be other motivations going on, you know, besides just giving information. Sometimes we are trying to paint a picture of ourselves to others by what we say. Like I've showed up here, you know, teach sometimes and told someone, oh, I'm not prepared today before the talk or after the talk. I didn't prepare for that. And that's interesting information. I guess we could put it in the Chronicle. You know, Gil was not prepared. Newsworthy item. But, you know, really what's motivating me is I'm protecting myself. Don't judge me. You know, because I wasn't prepared, shouldn't judge what I, you know, what comes out of my mouth. That's really, you know, I'm trying to say something that kind of protects me. I'm trying to kind of create an image. I'm trying to represent myself in a certain way, hoping that you would then take that representation and use that to see who I am. Boy, what a lost cause. But I think we do that a lot, right? We say things hoping to get a certain response, hoping to get a certain, create a certain image, someone sees a certain way. We try to speak kindly so they see us as kind people or cleverly or whatever, you know, all kinds of ways. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of motivation behind what we sometimes say. And so one of the ways I'm suggesting, one of the very powerful way of doing mindfulness practice is to ask yourself, why am I saying this? Why am I going to say it? Why am I saying it? Why did I say it? And chances are a good percentage of you will find that that's actually very revealing and sometimes very embarrassing. You might go find a friend, go for a walk with a friend and say, you know, I never really spent a lot of time asking the question, exploring the question, why do I say things? Maybe, you know, I could tell you something I said recently to someone and you can help me kind of explore, unpack it. What are some of the reasons? What's going on behind that? What were my emotions? What were my motivations? What were my beliefs? What was going on that kind of fed into saying the post office is down El Camino? You know, it could be something very seemingly very innocent, but it might unpack it, or you might choose something that's much more, you know, interesting in directions. So then if you look at these definitions of right speech and wrong speech, what are some of the motivations for lying, for false speech? So why don't some of you make some suggestions? We won't hold you to it that you talk from first-hand experience. But you can imagine why some other people might lie. Yes? To not hurt someone. Uh-huh. So that's one motivation, to lie in order to protect someone. And then sometimes it backfires, doesn't it? Yes? Yeah, please.
To cover up one's bad behavior.
So to cover up one's bad behavior so one looks good, perhaps? Or mm-hmm. Yes?
Self-protection.
Self-protection. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Personal gain.
Personal gain. Mm-hmm. Yes?
To avoid conflict.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps if we use the microphone. When people are just saying a couple of words.
Yes.
I don't know.
Maybe if there's a couple of words, I'll just repeat it. And then if it's longer, then we'll use the mic. Thank you. Yes.
To enhance one's
ego or self-image. Mm-hmm. To get a laugh.
So other people will like us.
So other people will like us. Mm-hmm. When I was in a Zen monastery, because it hurt so much for me, I became acutely aware of how much I was motivated by wanting to be liked. You know, and it was really painful. Have that kind of constant, kind of this amazing social gymnastics I was trying to accomplish.
Avoid yes. Punishment.
To avoid punishment. So some of these motivations, if you look back and ask what motivates it, you discover these kinds of things. But if you step back one step further into your heart, what do you find if you step behind those? And that's a vague question, but let's see what comes up. Yes?
Fear.
Fear. Okay. What else? Step back behind the motivation. What prompts the motivation? Yeah?
Hurt.
A
sense of self.
A sense of self. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Loneliness.
Craving.
Mm-hmm.
Insecurity. Mm-hmm. So if we start with our speech act and look at what motivates it and then looks at what's behind that and bring our attention to that, why is that useful? Why is that helpful to kind of go back and back and kind of sit there and be very mindful of that, the fear, the insecurity, the loneliness, the hurt? Why? Yes.
Through the ownership, it tends to stop externalization.
So through the ownership, it tends to stop the externalization. Mm-hmm. Great.
We can see how we're touching our own pain with our words.
We can see how we're touching the pain through our own words. Uh-huh. Yes. So it's hard to speak the truth unless we're in touch with that internal truth. So even if the truth, even if the inside is in pain, in some way, it's actually sometimes more powerful to speak that than to hide it and lie about it, and let the truth come out. I mean, this is what mindfulness is. Mindfulness can be seen as an act of saying the truth to yourself, being honest to yourself, and then. Mindful speech involves practicing mindfulness out loud. So you can kind of speak what's there. So if we trace it back to these things, then the suggestion in Buddhism is that that tracing back, you come to a place where you can begin finding freedom. If you have this fear and insecurity and loneliness and craving and all these things deep down inside, and you ignore it by only focusing on the rule of what's right and wrong speech, then you would stay with that, with those unfortunate kind of states. You understand what I'm saying? So that's why it's very important not to take the teachings of right speech as being rules that you have to follow kind of on the surface. Oh, now I have to just speak the truth in some way. But to actually kind of go deeper inside. Now, if you go deeper inside and you look at honest speech, when honest speech comes out of being healthy, like for the best reasons, what are some of the deep, if you step back and back, what are some of the deep kind of ways of being inside that would prompt honest speech? Yeah.
Compassion.
Compassion.
Pride.
Pride. Mm-hmm. Historically, pride is a negative thing, but nowadays it has better, so self-dignity, self-worth. Mm-hmm. The Buddha came from a warrior caste. And so there's a certain kind of pride or dignity or self-respect that warriors traditionally in the old days often had. So much so that some people I've seen want to translate the word sama, which is the right speech, right action, all that in the Eightfold Path, as upright. Not right, but upright. So upright speech. We stay upright. So self-respecting, certain pride. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes courage. Mm-hmm. Compassion, courage, pride, or self-respect. Yeah?
Transparency.
Can I say a little bit more?
That what you're thinking and what you're going to put out into the external world is something that is connected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. So there's a harmony between the inner world and the outer world. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Skepticism
about your own ego. Mm-hmm. Good. So maybe that comes together perhaps with a sense of inquiry and curiosity, interest. So because it's such an important point, maybe I'll get away with saying it one more time. That if a very powerful way of practicing mindfulness is to bring your attention to what is it that prompts or motivates you to say what you do. And then don't get burdened by that in some moralistic way. But rather keep focusing backward into yourself to see where you can clarify something really deep about yourself. And as you go deeper and deeper, to find where is the freedom? Where is the liberation there? And if you do that, chances are, I think, you'll find that it become obvious that lying, malicious speech, harsh speech, and idle speech, idle is maybe a little bit ambiguous, but especially the first three, that they come from places of not being free. So they're expressions of some place inside of us which is not free. We might feel it on the surface, oh, I was free to lie, you know, that was great. But if you actually trace it back, you probably find there's something operating there where you're actually somehow being constrained or bound or compulsive or something. And then you can ask the question, where's the freedom now? Can I find the freedom? And if I find the freedom or intuit the freedom, then how do I respond? How do I speak to others? How do I talk then? And then conversely, if we see that truthful speech, kind speech, gentle speech maybe, and useful speech is much more, and it can be much more an expression of freedom, then it's possible to use our speech as a mirror to help us understand when we might be entrapped and when we might be free. Now, it's certainly possible to be in bondage while you speak the truth, while you're talking kindly, while you're talking about usefully, right? I mean, some people tell the truth because they're really afraid in some unhealthy way. Some people tell the truth as a weapon. Some people, truth-telling is a form of malicious speech. You know, it's really going to jab it to the person. And so the fact that just to simply kind of say I'm speaking these, you know, the right speech according to these criteria, that's not enough to make it the noble eightfold path or the upright eightfold right speech. Again, you have to look back. So now, having said all this, maybe you can understand one of the reasons why meditation practice is so important for the eightfold path. Because as you do meditation practice, it allows you to settle on yourself and see deeper into yourself and have access to depths within yourself so you can begin answering these questions in a really deep and useful way. Someone who doesn't have a deep sense of themselves, deep understanding of themselves, and some deep ability to settle and relax and let go, doesn't have the same reference point for understanding what's behind their speech. And if you don't understand yourself really deeply, then maybe the tendency is to take these as rules. Surface rules. So it just kind of, it's the truth, you know. But if you have this, meditation provides this really great resource, a sense of well-being, a sense of freedom, a sense of ease, a sense of calm, a sense of peace, a sense of something, a sense of insight, a kind of seeing, that gives you a very different resource or understanding to help you analyze and understand what is it that motivates our speaking. So the two work wonderfully together. So the more you have some experience of meditation settling you, the more that helps you understand your speech. The more you kind of study your speech and understand what's behind that, the more material it gives you to settle in your meditation, to free in your meditation. So it's a wonderful spiral, kind of deepens with it, deepens together. Having said all this, I would also would like to say that mindfulness of speaking, for most people, is one of the most difficult places to be mindful. And it's certainly difficult while we're speaking. But it's possible. And again, meditation helps a lot because one of the functions of mindfulness meditation is to teach you how to be in your body more, be in your breath more. And the body becomes a great support or help for this process of staying mindful while you speak, understanding what's going on. But it's also possible to be mindful just before you speak. And I would give a tremendous kind of cheerleading for the usefulness of pausing before you speak. It doesn't have to, no one has to notice that you're pausing, except for you. Or they could. It could be a long pause. Say, oh, let me think about that. You know, you find yourself wanting to tell someone, you know, to just kind of, you know, you're wrong, or you know, you're a terrible person. That's a great time to pause. Let me catch my breath there. Let me think about this for a moment. Let me think about this for a moment. Most people will give you a moment if you say, let me think about this for a moment. And then kind of check in and see what's going on. So because it's so hard to speak, to be mindful while you speak, it can be very helpful to pause and be mindful before you speak. And then it can also be helpful to be mindful after you speak. We focus a lot, the language of kind of our Buddhist tradition, on being in the present moment. Because it's really helpful, it's very powerful to be in the present moment. But it's, I think a wise life also is a reflective life. It spends a little bit of time reviewing what happened. You had a conversation that was difficult, so you go for a walk and just review that conversation. What was going on there? What was really happening? And the more we kind of do a kind of healthy review, I think the easier it's going to be to be mindful while you're actually doing the speaking. So mindfulness of speech involves being in your body. It involves being present while you speak. It involves maybe pausing and checking in before you speak. And it also involves reviewing a little bit after you've spoken. And one of the things we check into then is, what is it that motivated me to speak this? What went on? What's happening? So now you understand why Buddhists can say, if you meditate, watch your mind. When in public, watch your speech. It's a very useful, very powerful saying. So, I hope my speech was right this morning. If it wasn't, I apologize, and I'll review it and think about it some more. So thank you very much.